Sometimes it's an accessory, like a piece of jewelry or a jacket, but for me, it's usually shoes. They become the signature piece that pops. They are fun to play with because of colors like fuchsia and mustard yellow and textures like velvet and glitter. Shoes give me the chance to experiment with boldness and style while keeping the rest of my outfit basic. A shoe style can change any outfit in an instant, taking it from day to evening. Mom knows best. Since I started acting when I was 5, I've been fortunate to be dressed by some of the best names and stylists in fashion. Honestly, I can talk skincare, makeup, and fashion all day long. But here's the funny thing. It turns out that all a woman needs to know about looking good, I learned from being a mom. I know it may sound counterintuitive. We've all heard the tired jokes about mom jeans and scarves worn to cover up spit-up stains. But in reality, a lot of being a parent is teaching our kiddos the basics. It's about uncomplicating the complicated. Now that my 3 kids are pretty much grown and are without a doubt the most beautiful children I've ever seen, here are a few lines I've preached to our kids and how I see them applying to me too. Eat your vegetables. You'd never expect your children to do well if you fed them junk and kept them sitting down all day. Kids need healthy food and plenty of exercise to thrive. Why would you think we are any different? Beauty starts with how we feel. True beauty radiates from inside. For me, and for you too, nutrition and exercise are critical to looking my best. I like to wash carrots, bell peppers, cucumbers, broccoli, and cauliflower as soon as I take them out of the bag and cut them up so they are ready to go. It's in those rushed moments that we grab the worst snacks out of convenience, but a little effort goes a long way. Wash up. So many nights when my kids were growing up, they try to talk me out of their nightly shower. Did I balk then? No. So why would I let my own routines falter? I will not go to sleep without first cleansing my face. There's nothing like being freshly showered and clean to make me feel sexy and happy. Brush your teeth. As any mama knows, a smile makes all the difference in the world, and bad breath can ruin the best looks. So take care of your smile, and it will take care of you. If you drink coffee or tea, invest in whitening or use a whitening toothpaste. You'll be amazed at the difference. Sorry, nope, you're not wearing that. Proud mamas make sure their kids' clothes are neat and tidy. Yet sometimes moms don't invest the same level of thought and preparation for themselves. Ask yourself these key questions. Number 1, do your clothes fit? A friend of mine recently lost weight through revised nutrition and exercise habits. Her clothes were loose and baggy. We're close, so I congratulated her and then gently shared that maybe it was time for some new clothes. She confessed that she was worried about buying new things because what if she slipped back into her old habits? I assured her that the opposite was the case. If she invested in herself, she would be more likely to continue her good habits. Once she saw it that way, she agreed. Number 2, are you dressed for the occasion? Would we send our kids to the beach in dress clothes or to a wedding in a swimsuit? Of course not. Similarly, we need to consider the occasion before deciding what to wear. It might sound obvious, but who hasn't at times shown up in clothes that didn't suit the occasion? It feels awkward when I'm the only one in jeans when everyone else is in business clothes. When in doubt, err on the dressier side and aim a cut above. You'll never feel embarrassed being the best dressed in the room. Planning matters. Stand up straight. The first time I heard myself say this to one of our kids, I thought, wow, how did those old-timer words come out of my mouth? But as a parent, I really started to notice the difference posture makes. A slouchy body communicates a slouchy attitude and spirit. My good friend Mary Lou Henner, who is my TV mom in the Aurora Tea Garden series, took one look at my posture when I first met her and corrected it. My whole life, I thought good posture was sticking out your chest, shoulders back, and butt out like an eager child waiting for the teacher to call upon her. But that creates an S shape, which can weaken and strain your back. I failed to engage my core, pelvis, and stomach by tucking it under, so my posture was actually enhancing my lower belly baby pooch. Mary Lou taught me to tuck in my tailbone, bringing my hips back in line with my body, and to pull my shoulders down as opposed to back. A great tip is to walk as if your head were being lifted by an invisible thread that runs through the center of your body. It's so much more comfortable than the posture I knew previously. It's incredible what a difference this makes in helping us appear graceful and confident. Sure, be a Power Ranger. When Max was little, he only wanted to wear red. Red shoes, red shirt, red shorts, red everything. It was his Power Ranger color. While I encouraged him to wear the colors that made him feel good, I've learned to dress like myself rather than trying to keep up with every trend. Just because something looks great on someone else doesn't mean we need to try to wear it. Put some thought into determining your signature style. What makes you feel your very best? Maybe it's jeans and a t-shirt. Maybe it's sundresses and sandals. Maybe there is a certain cut of pant that makes you love your shape. Or a certain fabric that makes you feel extra feminine. Whatever it is, build a wardrobe that is made up of pieces that make you feel like you, confident and classy. Your turn. Yes, the bad hair days will still come, but I hope you'll invest in your appearance and style because you're worth it. So your bad hair days will be fewer and your kind and stylish days will be innumerable. You're more likely to look good if you feel good, so take steps to exercise and eat healthy. Take steps back to the basics, develop a simple style, and work toward physical health. Rather than coveting or playing the comparison game, extend grace to yourself and others on bad hair days. And remember, the difference between a scowl and a smile is worth $1 million. Say goodbye to bad hair days and bad heart days alike by remembering that you are God's masterpiece, sharing a smile and spreading contagious joy. That's the real secret of every class act. Chapter 6. The Gift of Self-Control. Kindness takes responsibility for its choices and actions. In Season 2 of Fuller House, we filmed one of my all-time favorite episodes, New Kids in the House. Kimmy and Stephanie go to extremes to get DJ tickets to a New Kids on the Block concert for her 40th birthday. Although the tickets they bought end up being counterfeit, unconventional events convince the guys to give them 3 front row tickets. DJ's dream comes true when Joey McIntyre calls her on stage and sings, "Please Don't Go Girl," to her as a birthday present. Shortly after, Kimmy and Steph jump on stage where they all dance with the guys to the right stuff. Let's just say it wasn't only DJ's dream come true. The truth is, Andrea Barber, Kimmy, and I have been huge New Kids fans since we were 13 years old. So recently, Andrea, Dylanie, some of our other girlfriends, and I went to see New Kids on the Block perform at the Hollywood Bowl. I've been to almost every New Kids on the Block concert every year in LA when they tour, but this one was super special. Not just because we knew the guys a little better from having them on the show, but simply because of the amazing group of women I was with. We sang, danced, laughed, and cried. All kinds of emotions welled up. This probably wouldn't have happened with a co-ed group, but with just us girls, it was an emotional night. We women tend to feel things deeply in a way that baffles men, don't we? We are in touch with our emotions. It's one of our superpowers. We tend to want everyone around us to feel good too. That's such a blessing to each other and to the world. Being kind and classy flow out of that desire to make others feel good. This amazing virtue has a flip side, though. Sometimes we let our feelings take control of a moment, a day, and even our whole lives. That's troublesome, because while our emotions are a gift, they shouldn't be sitting in the driver's seat. If we're ruled by our feelings, we start to make decisions not out of a sense of purpose or principles, but from how we feel in the moment. We don't have the capacity to extend kindness to others because we're too wrapped up in how we feel about ourselves. Emotional decisions often result in regret. That warm, fuzzy feeling of desire turns into a decision to cross lines sexually. The feeling of envy provokes a hurtful remark we can't take back. The feeling of fear leads to a decision to stay in a relationship or job that is toxic. The list goes on and on. The gift of self-control. I'll be perfectly candid here. If it weren't for my faith, I'd be an emotional wreck. I know my capacity for strong feelings, and I know that without Jesus, I am just not able to keep those feelings in check. People give me props for holding it together when I'm being attacked for my beliefs, for holding my tongue when others are arguing hatefully, for having a strong and loving marriage, and having discipline in my eating and fitness habits. But believe me here, such praise makes me shake my head because it's all Jesus, folks. On my own, I seriously lack self-control. I have tried to control myself, and without Jesus, I can become obsessed with controlling other things. That's not self-control, that's fear. The good news is that God is sovereign. That means that He has the ultimate control, so the pressure is off us. Do you remember in the introduction when I mentioned the fruit of the Spirit found in Galatians 5, 22 and 23? This is good stuff. We can't think of it too often, so here's a refresher. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such things there is no law. English Standard Version. Did you catch that last one? Self-control. I can't drum up self-control on my own. It is an outflow of my faith. My body, my mind, and my soul are submitted to God. What's more, He has fully equipped me to control myself. I guess it's not really self-control I'm after, but God control. I lean on Him when I can't depend on me. When my own emotions threaten to take over, whether it's happiness, sadness, irritation, anger, whatever, I just look to Him. Practically speaking, that means I stop and pray. I read my Bible. I pop in my earbuds and listen to solid biblical teaching and worship music. I hold on tightly to this verse. God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power, love, and self-control. 2 Timothy 1, 7, English Standard Version. Here's what that means to me. I don't have to achieve self-control. I already have it. God has given it to me. And it's such a powerful gift that it's listed with power and love. My job is to use it. I cannot lose that gift either. God wants me to have it, and He will never ask for it back. I can fail to exercise it, but I have it for sure, because the Holy Spirit lives in me and will never leave me. John 14, 15 through 19. Self-control is evidence of my relationship with God. Just as an apple is the evidence of the kind of tree it clings to, self-control is evidence of God's work in my life. It is the fruit of my faith. Don't buy the lie. What's important to remember is that feelings serve a purpose. They aren't an end in themselves. They come and go. The sadness, the fear, the anger, these will pass if we let them. Even positive feelings, love, affection, glee, joy, happiness, pleasure, are fleeting. Temporary. Feelings are not reliable indicators of reality. They're not even necessarily good guides as to how we should act or live. Yet so often we let feelings guide our life-changing decisions, decisions with consequences to our relationships, our finances, our careers, and most important, our character. The truth is, our culture lies. Culture tells us that there is no truth, only how we feel about the truth. How many times in movies or on TV have you heard the well-meaning person say to the character in crisis, trust your feelings, and follow your heart. Anytime I see this kind of dialogue in a script I'm being offered, I know I can't say these words with integrity. It's a slippery slope of logic that the enemy, Satan, uses to try to trick us into turning from the truth of God's word. Trusting feelings to make a decision is like letting a toddler be in charge. If you let your 2-year-old make the decisions for your family, you'll have M&Ms for breakfast, watch cartoons all day, skip naps, and spend each day in purposeless exhaustion. Toddlers don't have the judgment, character, even the hand-eye coordination for the task of running a family. You'd never hand your family over to a toddler, so don't hand your life over to your feelings. Your purpose and your principles are trustworthy. So is God's word. On the other hand, your feelings are bound to steer you wrong. How do we make good decisions when our feelings threaten to overtake us? Let's look at 3 areas where we need God's help to use the gift of self-control: our bodies, our minds, and our souls. Number 1, self-control for your body. It's funny. We think of feelings as being something we can't see or touch, but feelings originate in the body. They're simply the outward evidence of something that is happening internally. Have you ever thought about that? Raising kids taught me that emotional outbursts from them, and from me, often happen when we are hungry, bored, or tired. Emotions were only the warning flare sent up to indicate a physical need. I learned to take steps to make sure my kids weren't taxed in these ways, and I applied the same method to myself. I'm a nicer person when I eat healthy, exercise, and get enough rest. I find I have more energy to be kind to others and put others first. My body has a chemical makeup after all. All those chemicals need to be in healthy alignment. It's funny because I thought I was hormonal when I was pregnant in my 20s, but as I get older, my body's chemistry affects how I feel even more, for better and for worse. For instance, sugary treats can give me an instant superwoman high, but then when the sugar wears off, I feel awful, sluggish, headachy, and worse than before I ate it. I've learned to make sure I don't get too hungry. When you're hungry or on a sugar low or high, you're bound to be testy. There's a reason the word hangry has become so popular. To help keep my blood sugar steady, I eat a healthy breakfast like a protein shake, a veggie omelet, or a bulletproof coffee. I keep small healthy snacks on hand, assuming I will be able to grab something to eat on the go has gotten me into trouble, so I keep several protein bars in my purse. I've saved unprepared friends from getting hangry time and time again. I eat regularly, listening to the cues my body gives me, and make sure to eat some protein and healthy fat every time. Avoiding sugar and processed food also helps me a ton. Staying physically active is another way I practice the gift of self-control. When I start feeling overly emotional or begin to experience feelings of depression, I lean into the physical exertion of working out, whether it's aerobic or just conditioning. The sweat and the adrenaline work wonders for my attitude and give me a reset for the day. There are so many good psychological effects of exercise. Number 2, self-control for your mind. Self-control comes more easily when I stay in the Word of God. In fact, that's the only way I'm able to have it. When I fix my mind daily on what Scripture calls the kingdom of God instead of my personal kingdom, I'm fortified to live out my purpose and stick to my principles instead of letting my emotions determine my focus. Let's not forget what Paul wrote in Philippians 4:8. Fix your thoughts on what is true and honorable and right and pure and lovely and admirable. Think about things that are excellent and worthy of praise. New Living Translation. Fix your thoughts is just a fancy way of saying think about it. Paul's advice is that instead of letting our emotions consume our thoughts, we make the choice to think about something else. This becomes most practical for me in my marriage during the times Val and I disagree. When I take the focus off what I believe to be his flaws and turn my thoughts to how I can better lift him up and help him thrive, things change. Knowing I'm honoring God by fixing my thoughts on how I can make changes in myself for the good of our relationship really helps me stay positive and let go of the negative. Number 3, self-control for your soul. Again, self-control is a fruit of the Spirit. It's a muscle I can develop and shape through regular use, but God gave me that muscle in the first place. The main ways I interact with God are worship and prayer. Worship is feeling and expressing love for God, whether at church or in my car or in the kitchen or on the beach. Worship is what we were all made to do. When I sing about God, that's worship. When I lift my hands with excitement for something He's created, that's worship. When I live out my God-given purpose, that's worship too. Without feelings, how would we worship? I think that focusing our feelings on our relationship with God is the highest, most worthy use of them. I love listening to and singing along with praise music as a way of worshiping. In fact, I created a custom playlist to listen to while walking through the streets of New York City and Central Park to work on The View every morning. Okay, a few of them aren't actual praise songs, but I think you'll see the theme here and how I turned them into worship songs to the Lord, knowing He has my back. Here are a few tracks that help me prepare my heart for whatever the day might hold. Soul on Fire, Third Day. My Beloved, Crowder. Able, Need to Breathe. Priceless, for King and Country. Devil's Been Talking, Need to Breathe. My Shot, Hamilton Soundtrack. Unbreakable Smile, Tori Kelly. Shake It Off, Taylor Swift. I also talk to God, a lot. I'm so glad God is infinite, because if He were limited, He'd probably get exhausted by listening to me all the time. But Scripture says, pray without ceasing, 1 Thessalonians 5:17, English Standard Version. So I know He never tires of it. As I've mentioned, I often write down my prayers, prayers of praise, of concern, of request. No prayer of mine or yours is beneath His notice. The simple act of reminding myself of that helps me have peace. Here's the reality. Emotions feel B-I-G. But it turns out they aren't as important as we tend to think. Isaiah 41:10 makes this bold promise. You might pick up the thread of a theme I mentioned in the last chapter. Here we see those fear not encouragements again. Fear not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. Isaiah 41:10, English Standard Version. There are a couple of powerful emotions mentioned in this verse, fear and dismay. We could swap them out for any number of strong emotions we might feel, and the truth wouldn't change. We don't have to be controlled by fear or dismay or shame or anxiety or sadness or loneliness, because God is with us. He promises to strengthen, help, and uphold us. His promises are stronger than any emotion that might swirl around in our hearts. Emotions are going to threaten to overtake us at times. They're going to feel uncomfortable. Sometimes they're going to be so delightful that we want to grasp them and hold on to them forever. Since we can't, it's going to be painful too. But Jesus promises that He's got this. It's all going to be fine. There's no need to be afraid of feelings or to be controlled by them. Nothing can separate us from the saving, creative, nurturing love of God. Romans 8:38 and 39. Not even our feelings. With that being said, if you ever feel like you're in such a dark place and can't get out from under your feelings of depression or anxiety, don't be afraid to seek professional advice from your doctor in addition to prayer. While prayer is powerful, sometimes we can't just pray away intense feelings of sadness, depression, and anxiety. The way I see it, if you found out if you had cancer, you would pray for healing, but you wouldn't stop there. you'd seek the best doctors to provide treatment in addition to praying. I believe it's the same for mental health. Also, don't ever be afraid to ask other people to pray for you and pray with you. We are stronger together. Your turn. So how can we practice kindness when feelings tend to overwhelm us? Try using the body-mind-soul approach. When your emotions, good or bad, have you feeling stuck, ask yourself, body. Have I taken care of my body? Am I hungry, tired? Do I need some exercise? Pay attention to your physical needs and work to meet them. You know how flight attendants instruct passengers, telling them that in the case of an emergency, they should put on their own oxygen masks before helping others? There's a lesson here for all of us. We are best equipped to take care of other people after we've taken good care of ourselves. When we tend to our body's needs, we have greater capacity to extend kindness to others. Mind. Am I staying in the Word? Am I holding fast to things that I know are true, honorable, and lovely? If this is difficult for you, save daily reminders in your phone of the truths you need to keep in front of you. Write the words of Philippians 4:8 on a sticky note and put it on your laptop or your mirror or your fridge, somewhere you'll see it. When a discouraging or frightening thought crosses your mind, give it to God. Soul. Am I spending time worshiping God? It's always a good time for worship. Create your own playlist of songs to help you express your heart to Him and to encourage you when you're facing life's challenges. And don't forget to pray. Prayer doesn't have to be eloquent monologues to God. Prayer is conversation with God, and we all have our unique conversational styles. Perhaps it's time to find yours. Ask others to pray for you as well. Chapter 7. Come on in. Kindness opens its door and life to others. I have two words for you, reader. Carrot and cake. That yummy, aromatic stuff is one of my all-time favorites. I don't indulge in it too often, so when my 41st birthday rolled around, I had my heart set on treating myself to a big slice of carrot cake with Val and the kids. That was the sum of my expectations for that day, just my favorite people and my favorite dessert. What I wasn't prepared for was receiving a whole carrot cake made from scratch by my friend Leslie and bunches and bunches and bunches of flowers. My dining room table was covered with flower arrangements. It was the sweetest treat to be so loved on by my family and friends. Seeing all those beautiful, delicate, colorful blooms and smelling their luscious scents made me feel cherished. That day made my face hurt from smiling so big. When I visited my best friend Delaney at our new home in Phoenix, Arizona, she showed me to the guest room where I would be staying, and there on the bed sat a basket filled with bottled water, snack-sized packets of almonds and cashews, granola bars, a gourmet dark chocolate bar, a pack of gum, and a travel-sized toiletry set. What a caring gesture to welcome me as her guest. Because of her thoughtfulness, I felt like I was staying in the presidential suite at the finest hotel. I thought, how great would it be if I could give flowers and special handcrafted gifts and baskets to my friends and family every day of the year? Can you imagine all the smiles? That's what hospitality looks like. It's thoughtful gestures that make people feel special and loved. It can be expressed in so many ways, maybe through a heartfelt handwritten note of thanks or a homemade gift or a gift purchased just because. Maybe it's an act of service, like bringing someone a cup of coffee or taking a friend's toddler to the park so she can get a nap. Some of you are smiling at the very thought of that right now. That's the power of hospitality. One of life's greatest joys. I love having friends and family over to visit. In our super scheduled lives, having people over seems less popular these days. It never used to be this way somehow. But with work, kids' sports, church activities, and music and school lessons, sometimes our calendars fill up and our lives feel like more than we can manage. Being busy has become somewhat of a status symbol, as if a busy schedule is what proves that a person is valuable and important. Deep down, we know better. Gathering together to eat, talk, laugh, and play is one of life's greatest joys. I love hitting the pause button to entertain guests. Together, we put the demands of life on hold and just enjoy life for a while. I believe such gatherings are the kind of rest that our hearts and souls long for. Because here's the thing. We need each other. God looked at solitary man in the Garden of Eden and said, "It is not good for the man to be alone," Genesis 2:18. That was the first and only "not good" God uttered as he created the world. Everything else in creation was good, but man being alone was not. It's good to get together, people, and enjoy it. Besides, if you need one, there's a scriptural encouragement to entertain. Hebrews 13:2 says, "Don't neglect to show hospitality, for by doing this, some have welcomed angels as guests without knowing it." Christian Standard Bible. You never know who will show up for dinner, so treat all your guests with special kindness. Our new house. We bought a house. It's the first home we've owned in LA in a very long time. When we saw the location, the yard, and the floor plan, we knew the house would work great for our family. We also knew that we wanted an older house Val could extensively remodel, and this one fit the bill. So we dreamed together. Val worked his tail off being the general contractor for the project, and over the course of 2 years, we've seen our dreams come to life. I'm happy to report that as I write these words, we're finished, and ta-da! We're moved in! The house we'd been renting for the past 6 years was great, and we really enjoyed it, but having our own home, one we've imagined and created specifically for our family, is so special. We've got an open floor plan with big, wide doors and windows that invites our guests to enjoy the view of the Pacific Ocean and the smell of the salty air while the breeze moves from the front of the house through to the back of the house and into the Santa Monica Mountains. It's what I love most about living in California, the ocean and the mountains together in one view. When we took the house down to the studs, I gathered the kids and Val in what would be the living room and prayed over the home. We wrote several scriptures on the floorboards, signed all of our names, and recorded the date before they were covered in wood. We thanked God for the blessing of our house and offered it back up to him. We pray he will bless and sanctify the time our family is here, but we know that it will always belong to him and is our temporary home until we meet for eternity. As we've settled in, I've been itching to host people in our new home. I can't tell you how much I'm looking forward to scratching that itch. We used to host a lot, but while filming The View, I was on the East Coast in Manhattan most of the week. The 2.5 days I had back home with my family each week was too precious to me to extend to anyone else. We protected it fiercely, and we had to put hosting on hold for a while. But now that our home is ours to open, and I'm no longer traveling coast to coast, week to week, we have so much to look forward to in gathering friends to join us in this space God has blessed us with. Lifestyle hospitality. Some of you are in that season now during which, for whatever reason, you don't feel able to have people over. Maybe it's because you're facing challenges, health challenges, financial challenges, or a family crisis. Maybe you've just had a baby, or you're caring for a sick relative in your home. Maybe you've recently moved and are still figuring out how to make your home in this new space, and you don't feel ready to welcome others into it just yet. Hear me in this. That's perfectly normal. There are seasons of life when we can't do everything we'd like, and that's okay. We have to learn our limits and respect them. Otherwise, hospitality will turn south very quickly, souring into resentment, and that's not good for anyone, host or guest. The good news is, you don't have to invite people into your home to practice hospitality. You don't have to break out the fine china, put on a pot of coffee, or pull the guest linens out of the closet to extend a generous spirit of welcome to others. Hospitality isn't dependent on a physical home. Rather, we can get creative and extend welcome in many other ways. Consider the other love languages that Gary Chapman talks about in his book, The Five Love Languages. Then try showing hospitality in one of those ways. Words of affirmation. I like expressing hospitality with handwritten notes on cards or stationery that I pick up in my travels. I know how good it feels to open up a sentimental card from someone just because. I love sending them to my sister, who lives in Virginia, and to my best friend, who lives in Phoenix. When I see a card or some stationery that reminds me of someone, I buy it and send it with sweet words to show the person how much they mean to me. I always love a good old-fashioned note via snail mail, which I think has become even more significant in our digital age. But I also love it when friends send me texts just to let me know they're praying for me or thinking of me. Some of my family members like phone calls best. Whatever your method, words are a great way to express hospitality. They're totally free. Well, except for the cards and stationery. And endlessly customizable. Quality time. Maybe you don't feel comfortable having people over, but you can still spend time with friends in other places. I like to consider shared interests and start there. Maybe you and your friend have been trying to exercise more, so you might ask her to meet you at the park for a walk. You'll both get a little exercise and fill your friendship cup. Or ask a new family at church to join yours for lunch at a restaurant after the worship service. You can also invite people to join you in activities you're already doing. Invite a neighbor to join you at your kid's sporting event. Reach out to a friend and ask her to join you at the farmer's market. You can even go grocery shopping together and grab a coffee afterwards. You don't have to open your home every time you hostess. You can make people feel loved and at ease in a lot of different spaces. Consider the regular rhythms of your life. Then consider how you might open some of these spaces for someone else to join you. Gifts. One of my friends, Melissa Coulier, is an amazing gift wrapper. Anytime she gives me a gift, I never want to open it because she puts so much thought and effort into the gorgeous wrapping, which has a special tie-in to the gift or something unique to the two of us. She uses stamps, freshly pressed flowers, string, ribbon, bows, and any other beautiful ornaments to make the box special. That in turn makes me feel so special. Spending lots of money on extravagant gifts isn't the goal of hospitality. It is simply to make others feel well cared for and important. Grab a $10 bouquet of flowers at the grocery store or spend a few bucks picking up someone's favorite coffee drink and delivering it. Gifts never have to be expensive to be expressive. Acts of service. Another way to show hospitality is to serve others. How can you roll up your sleeves and meet the needs of others around you? My pregnant girlfriend Miranda posted on Facebook that she needed someone to paint her baby's room the next day since she couldn't do it herself and her husband was out of town. I looked at my schedule, realized I had my morning open, and texted her that I'd come over to help and would bring a few gal pals too if I could gather some. Miranda later told me she cried over my message because she wasn't expecting anyone to help at such short notice, and knowing how busy my schedule has been made her realize how special she is to me. But that's what friends do, right? Thankfully for her, a professional painter also offered his services, and I'm sure the room will look better for it. Oh, here's another example. My daughter Natasha just brought me a cup of tea as I was writing this, which let me know she honors and cares for me. It really is that simple. Physical touch. A warm, firm handshake communicates welcome in a way that always amazes me. With eye contact, you quickly communicate respect. And while we're talking about physical touch, never underestimate the power of a hug. It can make anyone's day brighter. I just read an incredible news story about a police officer who pulled over a vet just to thank him. The driver reminded the officer of his own son killed in action. The two exchanged a long, meaningful hug right there on the median. The gesture was simple, but the results were powerful in the lives of both men. Shake hands, rub backs, give hugs, make eye contact. It doesn't cost a thing, and it can go a long way toward extending hospitality to others. I'll keep being hospitable in all 5 love languages, but in addition, I'm really excited about being able to host again. This house is a God-given gift, and I'm determined to use it to bless others. Sunday hosting. For us, Sundays are a great day for hosting. After all, it's a day of rest and relaxation, and that's what gathering is for, right? We have a family ritual in which we go to the farmer's market before church. We eat breakfast there and buy fresh food to whip up for dinner. Then we invite friends over for an early dinner at about 4 in the afternoon. We cook up a storm as a family, with Val as master chef, he's an amazing cook, and the kids and me making the sides and salads and setting the table. Our friends start to roll in, and the appetizers are ready to be eaten. Kids are playing, there's plenty of laughter, and sometimes singing. You can bet there's always a heated match going on over at the ping pong table. We love games, too. I found these huge outdoor checkers that have kept us all occupied this summer. We're big on playing games for push-ups, meaning the loser has to do them. We're all about the old-school board games, too. Monopoly, Clue, Yahtzee, Apples to Apples, Dominoes. How about cards? Oh, we love playing Uno and Hand and Foot. Jigsaw puzzles are a personal favorite of mine and Lev's. I've been known to pull out a good 1,000-piece puzzle and just get started. Next thing you know, all the guests are into it. For me, it's not about throwing a lavish party to make an impression. It's about people we love talking and laughing and enjoying each other. Conversation and a good time together is the goal. When I was growing up, my parents often had friends over. Even today, you can usually find them playing card games with friends and family. When they hosted gatherings during my childhood, it was always clear to me that each guest was given respect and honor, simply because they were in our home. In a million little ways, my parents were communicating, "Everyone is welcome here, young and old." And nobody escapes from my dad's hilarious jokes. Another thing I could count on was that my mom's incredibly delicious secret recipe chocolate chip lace cookies would be on hand. At least until they got gobbled up. Yum. It's pretty hard to feel stressed and unloved when you're nibbling on a warm homemade chocolate chip cookie. Family traditions like these are a great opportunity to welcome others in. When my friend Delaney recently got married, she invited every guest to join her in a meaningful tradition. During the Sri Lankan ceremonial portion, each guest who had helped to raise Delaney and her soon-to-be husband Neil, or in some way poured into their lives, was asked to come to the altar to receive a palm leaf as a symbol of their gratitude. Just about every guest went up, because every guest was that special to them. This reverent act stopped time for everyone and made us all feel special. Whether it's a week-to-week tradition or a special occasion like a wedding, simple acts of hospitality can be that holy. Crafting and keeping memories of time together. Nothing makes us feel more connected in life than spending time together eating, talking, and laughing. Here's a tip. I always try to catch a moment when I just stand back and quietly watch my family and friends enjoying themselves and each other. Let that moment wash over you so you can store it up for the times when life gets stressful. Those moments are like precious treasures we can pause to look at again and again. You might even keep a hospitality journal, a book to record the memories of your time together, or, like we have, a guest book by the front door for our friends to sign so we remember our time together. Entries can be short and sweet, just enough to jog your memory. Ice cream sandwiches on the patio with family and friends, game night with the grandparents, pizza parties with the neighbors. You might write down what was on the menu, who attended, any details that you cherished, twinkly lights on the porch, the smell of homemade brownies baking, or jokes you laughed at, stories you shared. There will always be more items on our to-do list than we can get done, so take time to just enjoy each other. The way I see it, building memories together is never time wasted. The main ingredients. If the word hospitality brings to your mind Martha Stewart's impeccable A-type personality preparations, I urge you to rethink. Remember that the goal of hospitality is simply to offer thoughtful gestures that make people feel special and loved. You know I love setting and achieving goals. When I keep the true goal of hospitality in mind, I enjoy hosting so much more. It's not about perfection. It's about finding practical ways to be kind in your unique style. Hosting should be as pleasurable for you as it is for your guests. Get creative, make it your own, and you'll enjoy it. Here are my top tips for happy hosting. Food. For me, entertaining isn't a fancy affair. I'd rather keep it simple. Homemade pizza, tacos, and a salad are classics with me. My husband is such a great cook that I never worry about our guests enjoying the food. I only have one rule. There should be lots of it. If your guests feel like they're going to have to feed their hungry children at the drive-thru as soon as the party ends, nobody will really settle in and relax. So it's essential to have plenty of food. Don't worry about trendy dishes and linens or perfect presentation. Just make sure everyone feels welcome to enjoy the food you have, even if it's just plenty of chips and guacamole, or takeout if you don't cook. Make guests feel special. Since we host at home, I like to tidy our house before our guests arrive. I imagine I'm a guest in our home, then look for ways I can enrich their experience of being with us. I might light scented candles in the entryway or put fresh soaps and clean hand towels in the guest bathroom. Maybe string up some lights in the backyard. Don't worry, you only have to do it once a year. My goal is to honor my guests, to let them know they're special. Tidying up signals to myself and my family that the people coming into our home are important. I want them to feel comfortable and know I thoughtfully prepared for them. I don't get too fussy about it. For me, it's all about a tidy house, pleasant smells, a little ambient lighting, along with plenty of comfortable seating. Greetings. No matter what size party we're throwing, Val and I always greet our guests by name. And if we don't already know the guest's name, like if they're the plus one of a friend of ours, we just introduce ourselves. That way, the guest replies with their own name and we just say it back to them. Once I say someone's name a couple of times, it usually sticks. There's something really special about being called by name. It's a little way of honoring the inherent dignity we all possess. It's a little gesture that will mean a lot. Activities. I like to make sure there are things for our guests to do. Some people might love to just stand around talking, but not everyone is extroverted or even likes to talk. So I have puzzles out and games in various places for people to enjoy. If we see that someone isn't engaged, I might try to enlist their help in preparing or setting out the food. I want everyone who comes into our home to feel comfortable and special. There's something for everyone. Venue. You can host people in places other than your home, too. When my best friend, Delaney, got married, we knew we wanted to throw her a wedding shower. Preparing for that party was so exciting. Just thinking about how special she is to me made it so much fun to think through the details, the venue, the guest list, the playlist, the flowers, the games, the gift bags. It was a joy to prepare, even though it was a lot of work. And we had a blast. The work leading up to it made the shower that much more enjoyable. If you host in your own home, consider taking the party outdoors. Our parties spill out in all directions. Some of the best memories of gatherings we've had include front yard games and backyard races, even while folks were congregating in the kitchen and the living room. When people feel welcome in every part of your home, they're likely to be comfortable and at ease. That's the goal. That's another reason activities and games are great. They keep people moving and increase the chance for fun and for interaction between folks you might not have expected, like the toddler playing horseshoes with the teenagers. These are the moments I treasure in my heart. It's poetry in motion, I tell you. Guest list. At our house, we love to invite kids and adults into our home. We want all ages to feel equally welcome. If you've only thrown parties for adults or for kids, you're in for a treat. Again, having games gives everyone a common purpose and bridges the gap between the kids and the adults. Sometimes we'll invite someone new, And when they walk in, I can see the look on the adult's face. Like, wait, kids were invited? But then we get them playing along and they end up having a blast. I love it when that happens. One caution. I avoid inviting so many people that the space becomes crowded. While I enjoy a bustling house, I've learned that when we have too many people over, I can't spend individual time with each person. When that happens, I run the risk of making people feel unwelcome, and that's the opposite of what I want. Unless it's a party, we keep our dinner guests to about 6 adults maximum and however many kids they have. Conversation. Sometimes hosts feel obligated to talk, but as hostess, the best way to honor my guests is to listen and to get people talking to each other. I try to speak to each guest personally for at least a few minutes. I'll ask them about something that will make them proud or happy, something to make them smile. When possible, I'll steer them into conversation with others. Some people are reluctant to talk. If that's the case, I enlist their help. Everyone likes to feel needed and helpful, so ask for help in the kitchen or with the games. Sometimes I'll even assign another guest to make others feel welcome. The more your guests feel at home, the happier they'll be. Your turn. Let's be honest. We've all had some failed attempts at hosting in the past. Maybe you've decided because of that lumpy fettuccine Alfredo dinner party that you'll never host again. Been there. Or maybe you've been on a hosting hiatus, but you're feeling energized to celebrate again. Here's the good news. There's no perfect party. When you don't take it too seriously, avoid Pinterest. And just think of hosting as a fun way to connect with people. You'll be freed up to enjoy it. I challenge you to start now. Think of 2 or 3 people you'd like to have over and text or call them today. Chapter 8. Graciously bold. Kindness steps forward in confidence for what's right. Filming in front of a live studio audience requires confidence. It's not for the faint of heart. You'd think I'd be used to it since I've been in front of a camera since before I was in my double digits. But even today, my heart races with adrenaline and excitement, like I've had 5 cups of coffee. And it's not just the actors who need confidence. It takes a lot of hard-working professionals just to get those cameras rolling. Our crew for Fuller House consists of about 170 people. That's just one of the countless reasons I'm grateful to work with the team on Fuller House. Andrea Barber, Jodie Sweetin, and I grew up acting together on Full House. Who knew that when they cast us 3 unknown young girls, we'd end up having this incredible chemistry, connection, and love for one another as pure and genuine as that of any real-life sisters. I believe it's part of what makes both Full House and Fuller House so beloved by millions of people around the world. You can see and feel that our love for one another, every character on the show, is honest, true, and real. To have this happen is a rarity on a television show. There must have been a little bit of fairy dust in the air when they put us all together that day, because it's been magical. We have a 30-year history together, on screen and off screen, that goes back to fighting over sharing a bedroom, having our first on-screen kisses with equally awkward teenage boys, getting our driver's license, and graduating high school and college, all the way up to marriage, as well as supporting each other through divorce, our careers, having children, and all living together again under the same TV roof. I've done life with these 2 women almost as long and as closely as I have with my real-life sisters, Bridget and Melissa. To say I'm blessed getting to work with them again and see them almost every day would be an understatement. We really are the She-Wolf Pack. During the filming of season 1, for a sold-out live audience, we kind of held our breath. The results were way beyond what we'd expected. The audience went crazy. People were overwhelmed, crying, screaming, cheering, simply at the sight of the living room and kitchen sets when the curtains went up at the start of the show. Every time one of our characters made their entrance, the audience screamed and cheered wildly and unapologetically. And yes, the loudest and longest screams are still for Uncle Jay, aka John Stamos. This thrilled us, of course, and the nostalgic relief was what the fans had been waiting for. We crossed our fingers and prayed that the mass audience watching on Netflix would feel the same way. When Fuller House aired on Netflix, the response was beyond incredible. The Teen Choice Award fans voted Fuller House their favorite TV comedy and voted me their favorite TV actress in a TV comedy 2 years in a row. Fuller House also won the Kids' Choice Award and People's Choice Award for Favorite TV Comedy in 2017. I believe we are the first show in history to sweep all three Choice Award shows across the generational demographics in the same year. We were thrilled. Advanced Symphony Media called Fuller House the most watched TV show of 2016, topping cult favorites like The Walking Dead and Empire. Something we were doing was clearly working, and new and old fans, some of them waiting as long as 30 years, tuned in to watch. Behind the scenes. It had taken years for Jeff Franklin, our creator and executive producer, to put all the pieces in place to reprise Full House with Fuller House. That made the fan feedback even sweeter. Many loved it for the nostalgia factor. The first few notes of the theme song alone had people dancing and singing. Other fans were happy we'd brought back characters they've loved since childhood. Parents got to introduce their kids to old friends and watch together. But perhaps most of all, people responded to the fact that we were making a fun, contemporary, family-friendly show in which the genuine characters learn from each other, grow together, and love one another unconditionally. It's the kind of show that not only entertains you with silly laughs and a few tears, but makes you feel like you're part of our family too. Creating current content but staying true to the heart of the original Full House meant we aligned with our original fans and made a whole bunch of new ones. So it looked to us like that first season was a risk that paid off. And truly, it was such a rush to be together again, to be part of something bigger than ourselves. Netflix quickly gave us the go-ahead for season two, and we quickly settled back into our 8 to 12 hour days on set, filming another round of 13 episodes. But then there was a change in the program. Should I speak up? 2 weeks into filming season two, I was at home with Val and the kids after a full day's work when the next week's script popped into my inbox. Excited to find out what was going to happen in the next episode, I dove right in. After reading it, I stepped outside into my backyard for some fresh air. My mind was racing and my heart was pounding. There were too many lines of dialogue, jokes, and plot points in it that felt completely wrong to me. I thought, did we just get a whole new batch of writers in the last 3 hours? Because the tone of this script doesn't feel like the show we've been working on. I wondered how the storyline for the kids had been written and approved by so many executives when, as a mom, it was obvious that the themes were more mature in content, and I felt that they were pushing the kids' characters ahead into situations that did not feel age-appropriate. Not only did I feel that this script was unrepresentative of our show's brand, I felt a personal responsibility to make things right for the families with children who would watch it. I felt that I needed to speak up, but I also knew full well that to ask the show's executives to scrap and rewrite an entire script just days before filming would be considered nuts. What was I to do? While I'm a confident person and not afraid of confrontation, I don't enjoy conflict. So to be honest, I'd have preferred not to rock the boat. But there was no denying that something in me was saying, Candace, you can't stay silent on this. So I talked to Val and talked to my mom, who always has good insight, and prayed some more. That prompting inside to speak up remained, with a fluttering of my heart, always my telltale sign that I'd better pay attention to whatever it is God has put there. That was it for me. I knew I had to talk with the executive producers. As uncomfortable as it might be, speaking up for myself and the fans was necessary. I'd need to take this as an opportunity to assert myself as a businesswoman, a concerned parent, and a representative for the family brand of our show that I'd been part of for the better part of 3 decades. So I did something that summoned my courage. I called and asked to meet with 2 of the executive producers the next morning to discuss the script.